Support for this program by the Alaska Native Heritage Center. Experience more than 10,000 years of history and culture through art, dance, film, and more. Exploring your home state is the COVID-safe way to enjoy the summer.
Welcome to Native America Calling. In Anchorage, I'm Alyssa Yakyadi London. Working within a single medium isn't enough for some Native artists. They express their creativity through visual arts, music, and writing. And they play off other artists collaborating and drawing off each other for inspiration. Glass artist Preston Singletary is one such artist. He's also a contributing illustrator and musician. And coming up, we'll hear from him and other artists about how they maintain their creative drive. That's all coming up after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. It's the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation in Canada, also Orange Shirt Day. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the day is meant to honor the lost children and survivors of Indian residential schools.
It's the first federal holiday to commemorate the horrors of the residential schools, and it's one of the 94 calls to action to come from the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. In the lead-up to today, many survivors were able to tell the stories of what they and their families faced. In Ottawa yesterday, some of them spoke to a crowd of hundreds of people. One of those who spoke was Prime Minister Justin Trudeau.
Every people are good at telling stories of how great we are. And we were heroic in this moment, or there were brave leaders in other moments. It's harder to reflect on the truth of the mistakes, of the evil that we did in the past. But that's what this day of truth and reconciliation, must be.
The residential school system operated across Canada from 1831 to 1996. The aim of the church-run schools was to help assimilate Native children into white culture. 150,000 First Nations, Inuit, and Métis children were forced to attend the schools. Thousands were abused. As many as 15,000 are believed to have died. The system also stripped Indigenous people of their culture and languages. Recently, the remains of more than 1,000 children were found on the sites of former residential schools in British Columbia and Saskatchewan. Today, all federal offices are closed for the holiday. Banks and some other businesses are also closed to commemorate the day. Several provinces, however, including Alberta and Saskatchewan, have chosen not to observe the day. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Orange Shirt Day is also being recognized across the U.S. for Native Americans and First Nations with walks, prayer vigils, and educational events. From an Orange Shirt Day rally in Juneau, Alaska, a memorial walk in Bismarck, North Dakota, to an honoring in Kansas City for children who did not come home and for survivors of Indian boarding schools. A man who pleaded guilty to killing a 10-year-old Kotzebue, Alaska girl has been sentenced to 99 years in prison. KNBA's Trip Krause spoke with her father about the sentencing.
On September 21st, Ukiavik Superior Court Judge Nelson Traverso sentenced Peter Vance Wilson to serve 99 years in custody in the disappearance and death of Ashley Johnson Barr. The 10-year-old Kotzebue girl went missing in September 2018. Her father, Scotty Barr, says he was grateful for the national support as the case made its way through the court.
I can't thank everybody for what they've done, what they continue doing for our daughter. I mean, it's hard to put words for the people that continue helping us through the past 3 years.
In June, Wilson pleaded guilty to charges that he sexually assaulted and murdered Ashley Johnson Barr. Wilson's plea was part of an agreement with the prosecutors that dropped the other charges, but according to the state, Wilson admitted to all the actions alleged in charging documents. By accepting the change of plea deal, Wilson gave up his right to a jury trial. During the sentencing, Judge Traverso first allowed statements from the prosecution and the defense attorney. After the attorney spoke, Barr says the judge gave Wilson the opportunity to speak.
He said he kept on apologizing to the whole family, both families. You know, he asked for our forgiveness for what he did to our daughter.
In total, Traverso sentenced Wilson to 198 years for the first-degree murder and the first-degree sexual abuse of a minor, with 99 years suspended. In Anchorage, I'm Tripp Krause.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Board promotes Indian artists of federally recognized tribes through its online source directory. Information on this no-charge opportunity available at doi.gov/IACB, who support this program. Support by the Center for Indigenous Cancer Research at Roswell Park Comprehensive Cancer Center, dedicated to cancer research, medicine, and cancer care for Indigenous population. A no-charge online risk assessment tool is available at roswellpark.org/assessme.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm Alyssa London. If you are a successful Native artist, chances are you are very busy, and there's a delicate balancing act between maintaining the drive to produce work, finding new inspirations, and keeping track of the everyday details of living your life and running your art business. So how do successful artists keep their creative tank full? We have some talented artists on our show today to talk about just that. Both are active with a number of multimedia projects, and they are musicians as well. And they have a lot to keep track of while they nurture their own passions for their art. We want to hear from you, too. Do you wonder how artists find inspiration in between living their life in the day-to-day? Call into our show. It's 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now, we want to take a moment to recognize Residential School Awareness Day, which is today. It's a day that organizers encourage people to wear orange shirts in solidarity with Indigenous people and to honor the children who were buried, many unrecognized, on the former grounds of residential schools in Canada. So thank you for taking a moment to think about that and recognize Orange Shirt Day. Now, we want to start our show off with bringing in our guests. We have Preston Singletary. He is known for many things, including his gorgeous glass art. He's also a musician in the band Kuik, and he is Tlingit. We also have Nicholas Galanin, who is a multidisciplinary artist working in a variety of media, also a musician in his band Yitzhin, and he is Tlingit Inunanga. Welcome to Native America Calling, Preston and Nick.
Thank you.
So
thank you.
Thank you both. You're both very busy. You have many projects going on at once. Preston, can you start us off with telling us how you balance it all?
Well, it's somehow of a juggling act. Yeah, I mean, I'm working on multiple. I have gallery shows throughout the year. That's how I make my living for the most part. But I've also been navigating into public art, making larger fabricated constructions of steel and glass, as well as trying to, you know, maintain the band. I have a 10-piece kind of jazz rock group, and so that's a lot to contend with.
Sounds like it. And Nick, how about you? How do you balance all of your projects? It seems like there's always a new one on the horizon.
Yeah, I think just keeping it moving is always necessary. It can be a lot at times. I'm carving a 20.
You're carving a big canoe that's actually going to be used by the Gold Belt Heritage Center, and it's been really cool seeing that come together when you post about it on TikTok and on Instagram. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay.
Breaking up
a little bit, yes, but we'll make it work. Okay, so you're working on a canoe, and how's that going?
It's good. We're getting near completion. We've got to steam. The next process will be steaming it, which we hope to do in a week or two. So, you know, this is an ongoing Mary.
It looks like you're working with several apprentices as well. Has that been enjoyable?
Are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. I was asking about your apprentices. we'll get through this. Do you have the ability to answer?
So you say that again?
Yes. Your apprentices, how did you choose them? Are they all in Sitka?
Yeah.
How's that going?
I've been working with my Lee Burkhart's been working with me on several projects. He's, you know, my cousin, and his father is my mentor, Will Burkhart. So, it's a small crew. I think it's mainly due to COVID times. Obviously, it'd be great to have a few other people involved if we could, but
that's great that you have, it sounds like, your mentor there, and that you're teaching other people as well, because that passes on the traditional knowledge. Preston, I know, although on the outside it looks like it's a one-man show with your glass art, but can you talk about your amazing team, where you guys do your work, not only in Seattle but abroad, and kind of take us behind the curtain, so to speak?
Well, you know, I maintain a studio in Seattle, sort of right in the middle of the city. I have a glass-blowing studio there where I fabricate most of the things that I do. I have 4 employees that are full-time, and they help me with various stages of the process, the cutting and the carving of the glass. So generally, I make the make the pieces, and then I design them, draw right onto this rubber stencil, and then pass it off to my team to take it through the various stages. I also work in the Czech Republic a bit, transforming wood patterns into glass sculptures, and they range from about 18 inches to 3 feet, and I've done some 8-foot-tall castings that weigh about, the most current one weighs about 2,800 pounds. I have, glass blowing is a very creative or very collaborative process. So we work in teams of at least 3 to 4 people, and sometimes more, but so I'm really used to working with people, and, creating that dynamic, that teamwork, having people to work with. You know, a lot of these people are my friends that I've been friends with for 15, 20, 30 years. So it's really a special kind of relationship, that glass blowers have as far as working together, helping each other accomplish different things.
Yeah, when I've gotten to meet your team members, they are all amazing and passionate. When years and years ago, when we were in Zalesny Brod, Czech Republic, I believe you mentioned to me that's the only place in the world where they have the capabilities to make 8-foot-tall glass totems. Is that the case? Can you tell our audience about that?
Working with glass on such a scale, it's sort of where the art ends and the science begins. So it's basically a lot of calculations about, the process of making such a large casting. And they're cast in sections, generally anywhere from 300 to maybe 500 pounds of glass. And so handling that and getting it to go through the firing process and the mold, there wasn't anybody that was really accustomed to doing that here in the States. I brought the project to many different people, and everybody had the same kind of question and challenge and trepidation about getting involved with such a large project. So the Czech Republic artisans have been, pushing the scale of glass casting, and so we decided to try it out over there and had, tremendous success.
Yeah, they're very beautiful. Nick, I'm wondering if you can tell us about the, speaking of scale, the Landback installation in Palm Springs, Palm Desert area. Tell us about the significance of that, how that came to be.
This was a project for Desert X Biennial. The project started probably over three years ago. And then, you know, just planning and organizing to get this work up on Cahuilla land. So the work was titled Never Forget, an installation to scale of the Hollywood letters and signage that's everybody is familiar with. It's a reference to the history of that Hollywood land sign as being a white-only real estate advertisement. So the work is a conversation about land and history of land, the history of the term Indian used in the United States to often remove indigenous identities and language and communities by the U.S. government. The work is a call to action, is a reference towards these trends of land acknowledgement with no action that we see more and more in institutions.
And so your call to action is so that the land back movement is actually tied to funding, right? I saw on your Instagram that was what part of the This Is Native Land sign is for, so that the land back movement is for funding. Yes, you cut out a little bit. Are you back? Well, we are about a minute to break, but Preston, I'm going to talk with you more about all your projects, but in about a minute, can you tell us about an exhibit you're really excited about?
Are you speaking to me right now or Preston? I'm sorry.
Okay, I thought I lost you, Nick, so I was going back to Preston, but since we have you back, so can you finish your thought about the land back movement?
Okay, and sure.
Yeah. And I think I lost you again. Okay, well, I'm going to go to break, and thank you, audience, for bearing with us. If you'd like to join our discussion today, call in at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Every day we tackle issues from a Native viewpoint. If you'd like to listen to any of our past shows, you can find the audio archive by searching for Native American Calling on SoundCloud.com. And you can follow us, follow Native American Calling on Instagram and Facebook, and also me, your host, Alyssa K. London. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Some of our favorite corn-based foods like tacos, tortilla chips, and hominy wouldn't be possible without indigenous science. Nixtamalization is the chemical process of making corn more nutritious and flavorful. Join us for the next Native America Calling to learn more about the history and importance of nixtamalization.
The Indian Arts and Crafts Act protects authentic American Indian and Alaska Native artists and craftspeople and their art and craftwork. Under the Act, it is illegal to market art or craftwork misrepresented as American Indian, Indian, Native American, or Alaska Native made, or as the product of a particular Indian tribe. Reporting potential Act violations can be done at doi.gov/IACB or at 1-888-ART-FAKE. Support provided by Indian Arts and Crafts Board.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm your host, Alyssa London. And today we have a story about how successful Native artists stay active and keep their inspirations going. If you'd like to share about how you pursue your passions and creativity, call in now at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now on the show today, we have Preston Singletary. He is known for many things, including his glass art. He is a musician in the band Kuik, and he is Tlingit. We also have Nicholas Galanin, a multidisciplinary artist working in a variety of media, who is a musician in Yatsin, and he is Tlingit Nuununga. So before the break, we were hearing from Nick Lannon about his land back inspired sign that says this is native land. And Nick, do you want to finish your thought on that?
Oh, yes. I was just speaking about the call to action, and that was the actual work. So the call to action was to allow for participants to donate to a GoFundMe that was set up that went to NALC, Native American Land Conservation. Over $50,000 was raised. NALC's work also included
Sounds like their work also included going after some lands that maybe were for sale and that they were able to use the money in order to perhaps purchase those for the tribe that they historically belonged to. Preston, can you tell us about an exhibition right now that you're really proud of or that you're working on?
Yeah, I have an exhibition that I've been working on. Put together a couple years ago called Raven in the Box of Daylight, and it's kind of an immersive experience is walking through the story of Raven and how he stole the light, stole the sun, goes by many different names. But anyway, it is going to be opening up at the Smithsonian National Museum of American Indian in the end of January. And it'll be there for a year. So that's something I'm really proud of and excited about. You know, I did work with some multimedia, some projected video and soundscape that I created with my musician friends. And, you know, interspersed Tlingit language, you know, to different stories about Raven. And so that was a very big endeavor, which I'm happy to see it's going to be celebrated at the Smithsonian.
That's amazing. I hope that they either do like a Facebook Live or some Facebook tour for those of us that can't necessarily go to it. But if our audience does get to go to the Smithsonian Museum of the American Indian, that'll be awesome to check out. Now I want to introduce the song that you sent in to our producers. Can you tell us a little bit about it, the name, why you're proud of it?
This one, I believe, is the 10,000 Generations song. This was off the forthcoming album, which is, you know, currently in production. It'll be ready towards the end of October, and it's called Wooch. The group is called Kuik. This album is a hybrid name. The Wooch is actually a Tlingit word meaning people came together, but we capitalized the W-O-O, which was the moniker for our sort of beloved and departed friend, Bernie Worrell, who we worked with for about 3 years creating all this music that we did together. And his concept of woo was bringing people together through music, so we kind of thought it was a very appropriate name. This is about, this song is kind of talking about the intergenerational connections, and it features Ka-Chung, Stephen Blanchett on vocals singing in Yupik.
Thought I heard him on there. Okay, well, that was a great introduction. Now let's listen to a little bit of his song.
Come on, young, 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 young,
Preston, that was beautiful. You must be so proud.
Yeah, it's our fourth album, and it's a triple LP. So I hope that people will look it up and check it out.
Yeah, where can they find it?
Well, we have a website, www.kueex.com, KUEEX.com, and that. Is where you can find it, but it's also going to be on Bandcamp and Bandcamp. Yeah.
Does your band have any shows coming up or things that you're looking forward to as a group?
We're going to be playing on the 26th of November in Seattle at the High Dive. That'll be essentially our LP release party. Where Daisy Chain and Air Jazz are going to open up for us. This is what they call Native American Heritage Day. So they're giving us that one day. So we're going to perform at this club in honor of that day, Native American Heritage Month.
How do you divide your time between music and glass art?
Well, you know, it's music was my first love, my first passion, and something that I do definitely make time for space. You know, it occupies a big part of my brain. You know, I'm always listening to music, researching music, and playing as much as we possibly can. You know, we don't play as much as we'd like to because most everybody is involved with many different projects, and so trying to get everybody together. Is a trick, but you know the work is a constant. You know, I'm always working in my studio if I'm not traveling, and so you know I'm pretty dedicated to that process. And then when music can come together, you know, we're working on a documentary film about the group right now. Actually, it's being worked on for us, and then. Yeah, and then we recorded a whole new album during this past year, this COVID era, and so this would be the next chapter after the material we made with Bernie Worrell. So looking forward, we're trying to, keep writing music and releasing music as much as we can.
Well, I look forward to that documentary. Do you have any idea when it's going to come out?
I think it's called The Magic of Noise, Kueek and the Magic of Noise. And this is probably going to be early next year, but I'll keep you in the loop on that.
Okay. Sounds good. Looking forward to that. What was the process of filming that with your group?
Well, you know, I contracted, some videographers to come and do some concert footage, and you can see us on YouTube. We have a little YouTube channel, with videos that have been edited and multi-camera videos. And so, you know, and they came to learn about my art and my work, or my music. And so I contracted them to do the music and also informational video about the large totem poles in the Czech Republic. And from there, they started to add on and ask questions about, they'd like to come film me here and there and here and there and everywhere. And it's been about 8 years now they've been following me around. and documenting my hair turning gray. With the music doc, there's also going to be an art documentary called The Magic of Visions in the Fire.
Well, I look forward to seeing it. And then, I mean, these are a lot of projects. What do you do to replenish your creative side?
Well, I try to pace myself, and fortunately the artwork is really still is maintaining I'm maintaining a very active schedule and actually selling work in this COVID era. Remarkably, the galleries have not really slowed down. They've had to work a little harder, but they're providing the stability for me and my operation, and developing work on an ongoing basis. From my perspective, there's no lack of inspiration based on the things that I would like to do with my artwork and the music. So it's the every day is a new adventure, really. What am I going to design today, or make in the glass blowing studio? So I'm very blessed to have that kind of an artist life.
Yeah, sounds like you get to do your passions every day. So how did you pivot during COVID times?
Well, it was a little bit of a concern, because not knowing how the work, if I was going to be able to travel and do shows and connect with collectors and what have you. Unfortunately, I lost my father over this period of time last November. Then I made a whole exhibition that was kind of like a tribute to him, kind of mythologizing his life, so to speak. And then, for me, it was a great way of sort of processing his passing. And I did it, made a lot of artwork, so it was in the forefront of my mind. So now I'm just really, and then I actually lost one of my last mentors this past spring. So it's like, the older we get, the more we're going to lose people like these, our family and our mentors and what have you. So just trying to, keep the knowledge of what, they shared with me about life and art and everything, and kind of, embody that moving forward. That's kind of how I have been able to get through this period of time.
I'm sorry to hear about the losses. It sounds like you're honoring them through your creative works. Can you tell us more about how you honored your dad?
Well, he was an outdoorsman. He didn't travel a lot in his lifetime, but he did a lot, in the Seattle area. He was a mountain climber, rock climber, snow climber, up into the glacial climbing. He was a fisherman. He was a very well-renowned fisherman, and he was a writer. So a lot of these things that, when I think of his life, I think that, he was also touched on so many different things, and I think that's what gave me, open my eyes to the freedom that I could really do anything that I put my mind to. And so that's how I have kind of operated. This exhibition kind of talks about him getting on the river in the morning and the things he might see floating down the river. And all these sculptures were kind of telling a bit of a story of him and his connection to nature. And I did it all in, Tlingit style, Northwest Coast style, and then even to the metaphors of him, getting sick and, these shamanic kind of charms that I created that, would help iterate that portion of the story, and then his eventual passing, and then the very last piece was a box with these two lights in it that kind of is a metaphor for him, you know, passing over into the next world, and you know, and actually meeting up with his father, which was, you know, he was very, very close to, and they were fishing buddies, and so there's so that was how I kind of told that story.
Well, it's beautiful, the level of detail that you brought your father into your artwork and glass pieces. So for those of us who want to see what you're talking about, where can they go?
I have a gallery, you know, my website, I think, is probably the best resource to see, you know, we usually post exhibitions that are current, and there's an archive of exhibitions and images that you can see, as well as a blog and all of that. So PrestonSingletary.com is probably the best source.
Awesome.
For looking at different things.
PrestonSingletary.com. Be sure to check that out. This is Native America Calling, and we'd love to hear from you today. You can call in at 1-800-996-2848. After the break, we're going to hear from Nick Galanin and some of his music with Portugal the Man. You can also interact with us on Facebook at Native America Calling. We have to take a short break, but we'll be right back.
As tribal leaders, we know we need to protect our elders, but it isn't always apparent what harms them. Some of our elders feel socially isolated or lonely. The more we are socially connected with our family and community, the less health problems we will have and the longer we will live. As tribal leaders, we can also create programs to help our elders. Connected Together, we'll stand strong. More on elder isolation and caregiver resources at ConnectedIndigenousElders.org. The National Indian Council on Aging supports this show.
This is Native America Calling, and I'm your host, Alyssa London. And there's still time to get in on today's discussion. We are in part talking about the process of finding inspiration day to day as a busy artist and working in many disciplines. Maybe that resonates with you and how you keep busy with your creative work. Let us know at 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. Now on the show today, we have two amazing artists. We have Preston Singletary, known for many things, including his glass art, and a musician in the band Kuik, and he is Klinkit. And we also have Nicholas Galanin, a multidisciplinary artist working in a variety of media, who is also a musician with Yatsin and his Klinkit in Ununga. Nick, can you tell us about the Galanin Knives song that you sent in to us and about your collaboration with Portugal the Man?
Yeah, the song is off of the last record, Yatsin record, we released on Sub Pop. Sub Pop's out of Seattle. And if you're familiar with their history, I suppose, you know, Nirvana and a lot of, I guess, that era of music put them on on a radar for, you know, a lot of reasons. So it's been really great working with them. It's been kind of an honor to have that sort of platform to share music. But this is the first song off of the record Indian Yard, collaboration with Portugal the Man. And there's several other collaborations on the record.
Okay. Anything else you want to say to introduce it before we go and listen to it?
No, not really. Check it out.
Okay, let's check it out. Nick, what a great song. What was the process of making that?
Oh, thank you. This project took place over the course of probably 2 or 3 years. A lot of, you know, I built a studio here in my home in Alaska, and artists would fly in and out and just capture songs and music. So COVID hit, and there was a lot more time home. You know, I travel so often for my work, so really just use that time to refine the record. And I just love the process of working with sound in general and collaborating with other musicians. I think it's such a valuable form of, you know, getting alchemy through through thoughts and energy.
That's great. I can hear your passion for collaboration. And yeah, I following you on Instagram for years, it does look like you traveled extensively before COVID-19. So how has this time allowed you to focus more on your work, your time being at home in Sitka?
I've definitely realized that some of these, you know, as great as travel is and as important as it is, you know, it's been also important to be home for obviously my family and my children, and then for the health of the community right now, I feel like too, as far as not traveling or doing unnecessary trips, and just utilizing that time to keep working. And I'm fortunate to have, you know, a studio space here, music studio and art.
Yeah, it sounds like it gave you some time to refocus on your family and also on your work in your studio. Your band name, can you tell us about that? I believe it's your name, but how did you land on that? And then if it is your name, what does that mean?
Sorry, you cut out there.
No problem. Can you tell us about your band name?
Oh, yeah, Seen is Clink It for Be Alive. It's also, you know, a part of my Clinket name, which is Yehyetzin. So that's where that name came from for this project. We're working on another record right now, and really, really just excited about the work that's coming out of the studio and the collaboration.
Ooh, can you tell us anything about that work that's going on in the studio right now and the collaborations?
I mean, it's so early in the project and process right now that it's not like I don't really have like much to say about it because it's.
We can just be excited that we know what's happening and if we can look forward to the outcome of that in the future.
Yeah.
What about your day to day? What is it like? How many people do you work with on a given day? Can it give us some insight into your creative process? I think you cut out, but I'm going to hold on. Sounds like... Okay, I can hear you again.
Coffee, emails, then off to the canoe. You know, I'm at the canoe till 5 p.m. generally right now. And then maybe the studio for jewelry or music. And that's kind of what the schedule is right now.
My assumption is that you love all of those mediums. Do one of them over the other suit your fancy, or just depends on the day?
Yeah, I don't have, I think what's necessary is the messages and the stories and, you know, the concepts and content that's being shared. So the medium doesn't really take a priority or, you know, I enjoy having options and keeping it fresh all the time. So
given that you don't favor one medium over the other, are there any, and that you're more focusing on the stories and themes, can you tell us about those common themes that thread through all your work?
Yeah, it's always related to land. I mean, can't get away from it. So, you know, we're the land and the sea, and I live in my ancestral homelands, and a big part of feeding connection and understanding of what that is comes from this place. So, you know, subsisting and living with the seasons and I feel like all of that's always deeply embedded into the work, whether it's care, whether it's history, whether it's, you know, continual struggles we have with, you know, colonization, colonialism, and violence in our communities based on those. So from there, the work can move, you know.
Given that you live in the ancestral homelands of our Tlingit people, but you're also Unangan, can you tell us about how that side of your heritage is incorporated into your work as well?
You know, I haven't visited that area at all, and I haven't been brought up or raised with that side of my
You haven't been brought up or raised with that side, so that's, and I believe you grew up in Sitka, and you've lived there for many years, so that's why your Tlingit side is more represented in your work, correct?
I mean, it's something that I'm familiar with from where I come from, and I don't intend to just force something else into my work if I don't have clear understandings of it yet. So.
No, of course, just was wondering how that might come into play, or if it has, and now we know that that's yet to be. What do you hope viewers or listeners will come away with from your record that we listened to a few minutes ago?
Yeah, I mean, I just hope people listen to it and connect with it. There's a lot of things that happen in that record that are important to me, and one of them is that it really is a lot of the content on that project is about connection. It's about care and love in certain ways that I feel like are revolutionary in our own communities. Oftentimes people want to consume trauma-based aspects of our histories, and we have more than that to offer creatively and in our stories and our work. And I feel like some of this record holds some of those.
You're saying that you want people to pick up on the positivity of our cultures and not just focus on the traumatic aspects of our history.
Sorry, you cut out.
You're saying that you are hoping that something that listeners take away from listening to your record and also viewing your work is some of the positive aspects of Tlingit culture and of Indigenous culture and our contemporary lives and not just the trauma. Is that what you were saying?
Yeah, I was just, yeah, you know, a lot of that record and the work is focused on connecting care.
Okay, well, hopefully our audience will check out your record and your album. Where can we find out more about your show? I believe it's coming up in October.
Oh, yeah. I've got a show at Davidson College, North Carolina, with a bunch of new work, some new installations.
And also, can people follow your work online as well? I believe they can. If you Google Nicholas Galanin and also follow him on Instagram, he's pretty good at posting. Preston, can you talk about the public art installation I believe you're doing in Seattle?
Yeah, the public art is a thing I've been sort of navigating into the past few years. Have a few under my belt. One we put up in Anchorage at the Boney Courthouse, which was a big sort of painted glass windows, which that was really fun and an honor to install a piece there. The upcoming piece is going to be at the outside of the Climate Pledge Arena, which is the newly refurbished arena that's on the Seattle Center campus, and that is where the new Kraken hockey team is going to be playing. And so this was a piece that proposed a few things. One of them happened to be a
an octopus design, sort of a steel and glass fabrication. And at the time, we didn't know that that was going to be the, you know, the mascot of the team. And then it turned out, I mean, maybe the people who were making the decisions did know. And so that's why they selected it. But in any case, that's supposed to be installed by the end of next week. And then the team is going to be starting to play in the arena shortly after that.
Well, that'll be amazing to check out. Thank you for everyone for tuning in to our show today. As we heard from Preston Singletary and Nicholas Galanin, they navigate a number of factors drawing from their culture, swimming against colonial concepts and stereotypes, and they work to express the beauty of the world as they see it to others. And among it all, they have taken time to listen to the voices inside them that inspire them to keep their creativity going and bring it out through their multidisciplinary artwork. The drive they have and the ways they find strength can be an inspiration for others, whether you're an artist or a college professor or otherwise. That's all the time we have for our show today. Again, I want to thank Preston Singletary and Nicholas Galanin. The show is live again tomorrow. We'll be talking about traditional indigenous methods, how they've opened the door for modern foods that we now take for granted. I'm your host, Alyssa London. Until next time.
Program support provided by Montana State University in Bozeman, where the Native American Studies Department offers graduate courses in areas such as American Indian literature, policy, and contemporary issues. Information about the on-campus master's program, as well as the online graduate certificate for distance learners, can be found at montana.edu/Native American. The Association of American Indian Physicians and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention remind you, receiving the COVID-19 vaccination protects you, your family, and your community, and urge you to please contact your tribal or urban clinic to get your COVID-19 vaccination if you haven't already. More information at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.